friends, you've now entered the Man Cave Podcast, unplugged and unfiltered. This is a podcast where the topics are mostly about sports, but sometimes we mix in some other items, like, is Bigfoot real? Who is the best Batman? You're guided through each episode by a man who's the man for his time and place, Dan Casper. So welcome to the Man Cave, and stick around for a while. You're gonna like it here.
What up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of the Man Cave Podcast, brought to you by our good friends over at Hy-Vee. In this episode of the Man Cave Podcast, of course, we've got a little Dan Casper Show instant replay where we're talking a little Brewers, we're talking a little Packers, all that good stuff. But our daily special is picks, right? Where we're going to kick this podcast off talking about, or I should say making my picks for week five of the NFL season, plus Major League Baseball postseason picks. So let's kick it off with week five NFL picks here. All right. So let's start with the Thursday night game. We got Denver versus the Colts. I'm waiting for the Colts to freaking turn it on, but they have just been such a disappointment in a division I thought that they should win. Now they've got Denver, who Denver's banged up. Let's be real. But Jonathan Taylor's not playing for the Colts. If this is in Indianapolis, I probably would pick the Colts again, even though they've burned me so much this year. I'm going to pick Denver to win this one. And then I'm picking Green Bay to beat the Giants Sunday morning football. I love me some Sunday morning football. This is the first time I'll experience it with the Packers, but kickoff at 8:30. I'm already up way before then. You know, by the time lunch is around, kick back and relax and do some stuff. You know what I mean? So I'm picking Green Bay to win that game. And then we've got Buffalo versus the Steelers, in which should be, or will be, I should say, the Kenny Pickett era, his first start. He came in last week, tried to lead Pittsburgh to a victory over the Jets. But it's, you know, first start going up against Buffalo in Buffalo. Sorry, Kenny, but I'm gonna go with Buffalo. And Buffalo's favored by 14 in this game. That's a lot, but you know what? I think there's gonna be a little bit of energy. I think Buffalo wins, but I don't think they cover. I don't think they cover. Forgot to do the covers for these other ones. Denver is cover or favored by 3.5. I don't think they cover, but I think Denver wins. Packers are favored by 7.5. I actually do think they will cover that one. So next up, we've got Seattle versus the Saints. And the Saints are favored by 5.5 coming back from London. Seattle, everybody's in love with Geno Smith right now. I do think the Saints win, and I do think they cover. Now we've got Minnesota taking on Chicago in Minnesota. Minnesota's favored by 7. I'm taking that easily. I'm taking it. I think Minnesota's going to win this one fairly easy. We've got Jacksonville, Houston. Jacksonville favored by 7 over Houston. Houston's like a pesky team. I think Jacksonville wins, but I don't think they cover in this one. We're going to go with Miami and the Jets. Miami visiting the Jets. We're going to have Teddy Bridgewater at quarterback. They're still favored in this thing. I think Miami still wins. I think they cover just because they're going to win by 3 or more. But it's not going to be a high scoring big offensive number if Tua was playing in this game. So I am interested to see Sauce Gardner, though, matching up against Tyreek Hill or Waddle in that. I think that's going to be a fun matchup. But I do think Miami's going to win this one, even with Teddy Bridgewater playing quarterback. Then we've got Atlanta visiting Tampa Bay. Tampa Bay is favored by 9. I think Tampa Bay wins. I think Atlanta might make it a little bit interesting there, but Tampa Bay losing the last 2 in a row, I think they might take some of that frustration out on Atlanta. Tampa Bay does win. It'll be close at the beginning, but I think eventually Tampa Bay will cover towards the end. Detroit at New England. New England favored by 3.5, which kind of surprises me here a little bit. I get it's at New England and such, and and that defense could be a little bit pesky, but Detroit's offense actually has been, whoo, Nelly. I'm actually going to pick Detroit in this one. I think Detroit wins this one. So I'm going to go with the underdog in here. We've got Tennessee visiting Washington. Tennessee's favored by 2.5. I will take Tennessee on that, and I think Tennessee covers that. We've got the Chargers visiting the Browns. Chargers favored by 2.5. I'll take that, and I think the Chargers do cover. We've got San Francisco coming off of a big win against the Rams this prior week. They're going up against Carolina. San Francisco's favored by 6.5. I think San Francisco wins, but I don't think they cover. I think it's going to be a low-scoring game. I think San Francisco will win by like 5 or 6 or something like that, but I don't think they'll cover. Let's go with Philly at Arizona. A little surprising that Philly's not favored more in this one, but Philly, 5.5 favorite. I'm going to pick Philly in this one, and I think they do cover in this. Dallas at the Rams. Rams favored by 5.5. Rams win, Rams cover. Cooper Rush loses his first game as a starting quarterback for the Cowboys and in the NFL. If the Rams won last week, maybe it's a little bit closer, but I think the Rams, they see this as a must-win game for them. We got the Bengals visiting Baltimore. Baltimore's favored by 3. I think the Ravens win it, and I think they do cover. Kansas City going up against the Raiders. The Chiefs are favored by 7.5. Chiefs win, and I think the Chiefs cover too. So those are my picks for Week 5 in the NFL season. How about some Major League Baseball postseason picks? Now that postseason is starting up here on Friday, I'm going a little bit of a different route. Okay. I know a lot of people are going Yankees or Houston, I should say, and the Dodgers coming out of the National League here, but I'm going a different route. I'm going with my gut, and I'm going with kind of what I want to see here too. But I think baseball, once you get into the postseason, it's all about momentum. Who's playing some of the best baseball? Who's, you know, I think that's a big part of it all, which kind of makes the case for one of my picks. Doesn't necessarily make the case for my other pick. But let's just get into it. So Tampa Bay, Cleveland, wild card matchup, Cleveland Guardians, 3 seed. I'm going with Cleveland to advance, and they will face the Yankees. In the series that I think is going to be a lot of fun, the Mariners versus the Blue Jays. I would love to see the Mariners make a run here, but I think the Blue Jays get that victory. They will face Houston. And then going back to Cleveland versus the Yankees, I think Cleveland upsets the Yanks, and they move on to the ALCS, where they will face the Houston Astros. And so we have the Houston Astros and Dusty Baker going up against the Cleveland Guardians and Terry Francona. I'm going with the Guardians. Guardians have played perhaps the best baseball in the second half since September 5th, I think was the number I looked up. Till now, they've only lost 6 games. I'm going with Cleveland because they're playing well. They're one of the hottest teams. They're going to advance to the World Series. National League, Phillies versus the Cardinals. Cardinals take care of business. They will face the Braves. And then we've got the series that I think a lot of people are paying attention to, a lot of people are excited about. It's the Padres versus the Mets. Mets get the victory. Mets face the Dodgers. Then we've got Cardinals versus the Braves. Braves, one of the hottest teams, too. They're playing really good baseball. Defending World Series champions. Braves beat the Cardinals. They advance to the NLCS. Dodgers, a lot of people picking them. They've won the most games in the regular season. They're freaking awesome. I think a Mets-Dodgers series is going to be a lot of fun to watch. The Mets won the season series against them. And I think the Mets win. Yep, I'm going with an upset. Going with the upset. I'm going with the Mets to advance for a rematch against the Braves in some highly contested games towards the end of the regular season where the Braves beat the Mets to get the NL East. But this is where the Mets get their revenge. They advance to the World Series to face the Cleveland Guardians, where the streak will be over with. It's over. Cleveland finally gets a World Series championship, and it happens to be the first year they are under the name the Guardians. So that's my picks. A little off the wall, but we mentioned it in another podcast, in another episode of this podcast. it seems like it's a lot of the same teams in the postseason as of late for Major League Baseball, but you look at the World Series winners, and there's a little bit of a parity there, right? Dodgers have been there. Seems like they've been there every single time, right? They've won it once. They've been to the World Series a few times, but they've only won it once. So with that in mind, I'm going with a little bit of a different route with my picks here. Cleveland, Mets, Guardians win it. So that's your daily special. Some extra picks for this episode of the Man Cave Podcast. All right, quick break, and then it's Dan Casper Show instant replay time. All right, we're going to talk some Brewers, and we're going to talk some Packers offense coming up after this quick break. Your tailgating headquarters is at Hy-Vee in Eau Claire. Their top-of-the-line meat department, which includes the Dan Good Burger, will make you the talk of your tailgate party. And the dips for snacking? Those are what will make you an MVP on game days. And you never have to worry about Hy-Vee not having what you need, because their shelves and coolers are always stocked up with your favorite goods. Be the MVP of your tailgate party with the help from another MVP. That's Hy-Vee in Eau Claire, located at 2424 East Claremont Avenue. Do you have the confidence in David Stearns and Craig Counsell to get this team back to the postseason next year? I'll tell you, one of the players that's, if I had to pick one player that surpassed my expectations this year, I'm probably going to go with Rowdy Tellez. Because at the beginning of the year, you know, we were kind of talking about the first base, and would it be like a platoon, or you know, should they get a better, more consistent player than Rowdy Tellez? Because we've seen some good parts of Rowdy Tellez, but, you know, would we need somebody more consistent there? And while his batting average, I mean, nothing to write home about, .219 and that, but his OPS was a .767. But he led the team in home runs with 35. So, while, yeah, I would like to see that average up there, no doubt. I mean, his batting average is down this year compared to his career numbers. His on-base, though, and his OPS pretty much matching his career numbers. But when we kind of look at, you know, some of the stuff throughout his career, he did hit 21 home runs in 2019 for the Toronto Blue Jays. And the fact that he led the team in homers and 35, I didn't know what to really expect from him this year, because I thought, okay, is it going to be a platoon? Are they going to put all their eggs in their basket with Rowdy Tellez? And, you know, is he going to be able to perform, or, you know, kind of struggle at the plate there? But shout out to him. You know, he displayed his power this year. So now, does that mean, I'll be curious, to hear from Brewers fans too, like with Rowdy Tellez, would you be okay with Rowdy continuing to be the everyday starting first baseman? You know, he's got the power. He's displayed that. But would you like to have a little bit more consistency? It's a different trend in baseball, though, too, isn't it? So, but I would say Rowdy Tellez, for me, was a player that, you know, surpassed my expectations. I might go a little bit with Andrew McCutchen. I didn't know what to really expect from Andrew McCutchen this year, to be honest with you. I didn't know. And you look at his numbers, and yes, his home run ball was down. 27 last year for Philly, just 17 this year. But his batting average was up a little bit more this year. I really didn't know what to expect from McCutchen. So, maybe he kind of, just a skosh over. Not too much, but Tyrone Taylor, I think you can make a case for him displaying some power this year. 17 home runs for the kind of the roving outfielder, getting a lot of playing time in center field this year, appearing in 120 games, 373 at-bats. But, yeah, that'd be another one out there. Hunter Renfroe, I think, when you kind of look at what he did this year, 29 home runs, an average of .255. That's higher than his career average, batting average. His career batting average is a .240. His on-base percentage this year, .315, 15 points higher than his career average. His OPS is an .807. That's 17 points higher than his career average. When you kind of look at his career overall, last year with Boston, he hit 31 home runs. This year, 29. Similar. Batting average last year for Boston, 259. This year for Milwaukee, 255. The biggest difference is the RBIs, and a lot could just be, you know, those are factors he might not have a whole lot of control in. But last year for Boston, 96 RBIs. This year, 72. But I think if I had to do like an offensive MVP for the Brewers, it would be between Hunter Renfro and Willie Adames for me. Willie Adames this year, his average was below his career average. He hit 238 this year. Average has been 255. His on-base percentage and OPS down from his career numbers. But 31 home runs, 98 RBIs. Last year he hit 25 total home runs, 73 RBIs. Batting average was a 262 last year. So I'd go between Willie and I think Hunter Renfro is my offensive MVPs this year. And perhaps the disappointing player for me, I mean, I think a lot of people are still going to pick Christian Yelich, and I get it, and I would still probably put him on that list too. I mean, he's definitely on the short list for me, no doubt about it. And maybe, I don't know if this is the version of Christian Yelich we're going to get, but then if this is the version of Christian Yelich we're going to get in the future, you know, there's going to be questions about contract and performance and that, right? So he finishes this year 252, 14 dingers, 57 RBIs. Did take more walks this year than what he did last year. In fact, he's taken more walks this year, Christian Yelich, than he had in any other season. The only other two times that he has had at least 80 walks in the season, you got to go to 2017 with Miami. In 2019 with the Brewers. Both those years he had 80 walks. So he took more walks this year. He also struck out more this year. 162 strikeouts. The second highest number in his career. You got to go back to 2016 when he struck out 138. He's got a couple 137s on there, 135. But this year, definitely struggling a little bit with the Ks, with the strikeouts. So, I mean, I would still go with it was a disappointing year for me for Christian Yelich. Yes, he improved with the batting average and that, but you'd like to see that home run tally get up there a little bit more, maybe somewhere in the 20s. You know, doubles, he had 25 this year compared to 19, but, you know, during that 2016 and 2019 stretch, I'll expand it actually. 2014 to 2018, he had at least 30 doubles each season. 30, 30, 38, 36, 34, 29 in 2019. So he had 25, but you'd like to see, okay, if he's not going to have that home run ball, you know, maybe a little bit more like, remember when Jonathan Lucroy was just like the doubles machine for the Brew Crew? And maybe with the whole, you know, banning the shifts and all that sort of stuff, these numbers will be a whole lot different for these players. And that's where, you know, the whole analytics side is going to come into play with this thing. You know, with Major League Baseball going to be banning the shift coming up here, I'll be curious to see how much these numbers change for players next year. And, you know, are we going to see, like, the Brewers keep the majority of these players kind of run it back with them, be like, yeah, you know, with banning the shift and all that, will that kind of, you know, increase the production, increase the numbers here a little bit? That's for the analytics people out there. But I would say I'm still a little disappointed in Christian Yelich's year this year. You know, total bases, 220, more than last year, 149. Still, 2016, 279, 2017, 264, 2018, and 19, those two phenomenal years, 343 and 328. You'd like to get a little bit higher in the 200s, though. So, yeah, I would say down here. Didn't really quite live up to my expectations. I was hoping for at least 25 dingers, maybe, you know, like at least a 270 batting average and that. Maybe another player, too, that I would throw on there that quite didn't play up to my expectations or I thought would take a jump or was really hoping that would take a jump this year was Luis Urias. Now, he started off the season pretty darn good after, you know, being banged up, and then he came back and started off pretty hot. But, you know, last year he was coming off of a year where he had 23 home runs and 75 RBIs in 150 games. He hit for an average of .249. His OPS was a .790. His slugging was a .445. This year, numbers were down. Played in 119 games, so I mean you're losing what, 31 games there, but just 16 home runs, 47 RBIs. His average was down 10 points. His on-base percentage was down 10 points. His slugging percentage was down 41 points, and his OPS was down about 50 points, 51 points it looks like. So I would say Luis Urias was kind of another player I would say didn't quite live up to the expectations I had for him. Now, if we want to go pitching-wise, Corbin Burnes, I think, had a quiet sub-3 ERA season. And when you look at the record, you know, which we try not to do with pitchers anymore, but 12-8. 2.94 ERA, pitched over 200 innings this year for the Brew Crew. Cy Young-worthy numbers? Probably not, no. I mean, but still, a fantastic year. Brandon Woodruff, I think, had a quiet year, and if we rewind it to the spring training, and it was like, dude, throwing gas, and guys are just kind of, you know, hitting him. Taking advantage. And if you remember, we talked to Will Sammet from The Athletic. He now covers the Mets. That's why we haven't had him on in a little while. But at that time, he said, if there's one guy I'm not really, really worried about, it's Brandon Woodruff. While a lot of people were worried about Brandon Woodruff, and even at the beginning of the season, remember Will saying, that's one guy I'm not worried about. And he turned it around. Brandon Woodruff absolutely turned it around. 13-4, 3.05 ERA. He missed some time with some injuries this year, but pitched in 27 games. Corbin obviously led the team in games started with 33. Eric Lauer started off hot this year, then kind of had some inconsistencies. Ended up finishing with 11-7 record, 2.69 ERA. 29 games started. Freddy Peralta, injuries really derailed his year, which is disappointing. You know, we were looking for him to kind of have that, all right, good year last year, right? Made the All-Star team last year. Let's see that trend. Let's see that arrow continue to climb. Well, injuries derailed it. Appeared in 18 games, started 17. 4-4 with a 3.58 ERA. So I don't think anybody's necessarily, like, down on Freddy Peralta. It was just disappointing that injuries derailed his season this year. Only pitched in 78 innings this year. And then we got to see Aaron Ashby for an extended time. 27 games he appeared in. 19 of those he started. 4.44 ERA. 2-10 record. Seen the highs and the lows there a little bit. But, you know, when we talk about the pitching, it's going to be about that bullpen. It's going to be about the back end of that bullpen. And that's something that Stearns and Council are going to have to figure out in the offseason. You know, Devin Williams, probably going to be the man to close it out unless they feel like, all right, you know what, let's move him back to a setup role. That's where he thrives. That's where he's better at. I don't know. I'd be good with him being the closer. But there's no doubt about it. The Brewers have to figure out some back-end bullpen stuff because some of the guys that they brought in after that Josh Hader trade, Taylor Rogers didn't really work out. Matt Bush didn't really work out. So that is definitely something that the Brewers, that David Stearns has to do this offseason, is really kind of rebuild that bullpen. I mean, we saw it again yesterday, the bullpen losing the game, blowing the saves. If that's one of the biggest needs that, I mean, I think this team has a lot of needs. I mean, they need maybe a couple more bats, but they obviously need to build up that bullpen again, in my opinion. All right, your thoughts. Do you have confidence in David Stearns and Craig Counsell to get this team back to the postseason? Do you have confidence that David Stearns will maybe be aggressive this offseason and build a playoff contending team this offseason? Who are some of the players that maybe surpassed your expectations a little bit? Who are your most disappointing players this year? Hit us up with some text, tweets, or Facebook messages, okay? We're going to take a quick break. We'll get to your thoughts. And then coming up next hour, we'll hit up a little green and gold chat. Aaron Rodgers, again, talked about his future. What did he have to say? Going to have to pregame it a little bit different this Sunday with the early game, early kickoff in London, 8:30 Sunday morning. So if you're looking maybe do a little breakfast supplies or a little brunch for the game, head on over to your tailgating headquarters. That's Hy-Vee right here in Eau Claire. Breakfast supplies, maybe, like I said, a little brunch. Then afterwards, you can fire up the grill for a little bit of lunch there and maybe kick back and relax and watch some of the other games without all the stress levels and the blood pressure rising. So, but your tailgating headquarters right here in Eau Claire is, of course, our good friends at Hy-Vee. Let's take a quick phone call here this morning. Good morning, C-Bomb. What's on your mind?
Well, good morning, El Capitano. How are you doing this little kind of gloomy Thursday morning?
You know, I'm a little tired, man. I'm ready for the weekend, I think. It was hard to get out of bed this morning.
I hear you, brother. That's me every day.
Yeah.
That age is catching up on you, Dad.
It is. It is, dude. Holy moly. So, but, hey, we're here. Got the flannel on like everybody else in this state now, so we're ready to rock.
Ready to rock, ready to roll. And I'll tell you what, I want the Brewers to be ready to rock and ready to roll next spring. It's such a disappointing year. It's the first time in my life I actually thought they had a team that could really contend for a World Series, and they tanked and didn't even make the playoffs. So do I have confidence in Stearns? Absolutely. As long as his heart's in it to stay in Milwaukee and he isn't eyeing the Mets, I'm really, you know, the Hader trade took the wind out of their sails, but really, what did they see? Because Hader didn't, you know, he didn't revert back to the Hader that he normally is after the trade either. So, you know, did they see something? Or, you know, I worry about the offense, and they're going to have to add pieces because are they going to wait for Jackson Chourio? I mean, I don't even know if he's going to be ready next year.
Right.
But they got Joey Weimer coming up, and then, you know, Garrett Mitchell, small sample size, but it looked really well. I mean, you know, when he had about 80 at-bats, he was hitting .311.
Mm-hmm.
So, the you know, that kid shows a little potential. So, I still think they're going to need to add bats. They have to take advantage of this pitching because when healthy, this staff is phenomenal.
I think, you know, the other part of me, too, is wondering how much are they going to factor in with Major League Baseball banning the shift for 2023, and are they going to look at, because we look at these numbers, right? We look at these batting averages, and we see how they're down and all that. The part of me is wondering how much of the analytics side of everything going to come through with these roster decisions, and they're going to be like, well, you know, with banning the shift, his numbers would have been this, that, or the other, or whatever. So, you know, we're going to kind of run it back with the team that we had this year because we feel like those numbers will be better based off banning the shift. That's the one thing I'm going to be curious about with a lot of decision makers this offseason. How much does that affect the, you know, that rule change in building these teams?
Yeah, that might have some effect. I still hate that rule. I mean, hit it where they ain't. You're professional baseball hitters, you know, and the art of the game is being lost. You don't see if they put that big shift, bunt it down the third baseline. Mm-hmm. But, you know, so, okay, so does Telez's average go from 219 to 228?
Right.
You know, so I think we have to have at least one hitter flirting with 300, you know, and when we're talking about guys leading the team in average with 250, that's unacceptable. We're not going to win a World Series that way, in my opinion.
Yeah, I would agree with you that I think they need that one power bat in the lineup, that one consistent power bat in that lineup, that three or four hitter. Because right now, who is it? It's not Christian Yelich anymore. But I don't think they have that guy.
Correct.
Willie Adames, I don't know if he's that guy. I'd rather see Willie at like the two spot.
Yeah, and you know, and Willie himself, he's hitting about 240. So, you know, they need, and maybe it's just the way baseball is going, and I'm that old curmudgeon, but it drives me nuts that we have guys, you know, in the lineup, up and down the lineup, batting 220.
Mm-hmm.
It's ridiculous.
I'd agree with you. Maybe we're just too old school at this point, man. Maybe we need to be more analytically involved in this whole thing with exit velocities and all that stuff.
Yeah, I'm not smart enough to figure all that stuff out.
Yeah, same here,
but
man.
I'll tell you what, I mean, with the struggles the Brewers had and the pitching staff, you know, having injury issues all year, and they still finished 10 games over, I mean, the roster is talented enough to make a run. We need a few key pieces, and we need to stay healthy and go after it.
You know, so you just brought that up. They're 10 games over. They finished 10 games over 500 with all the issues that they had, with a lot of those blown saves and that in the offense. Does that give more credit to Craig Counsell?
I think it does. I think Craig Counsell does a fine job with what he's got. What else can you do with a lineup that's full of 220 hitters? I mean, you can move them around all you want. You're getting the same production no matter what.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they had injuries, and the bullpen wasn't what they hoped it would be after the Hader trade. So you can't put it all on Counsell. I think it's a down year. I mean, you can't hit 1,000, man. And it was a disappointing year. But I think, you know, after four straight years in the playoffs, they had a dud. Let's see what happens next year.
Do you have more confidence in Counsell or Stearns?
Oh, that's a tough question. I really have loved all of Stearns' moves. The Hader trade really, it pulls at the heartstrings, I think, more than, if you look at the results of it all, I don't think it was as bad as I feel about it, but I have confidence in both of them, man. I don't want to, if we had to lose one of them, I don't know. It would be a coin flip for me.
All right. Well, maybe we'll make that a Twitter question, okay? See where the... Yeah,
that's a really good one. I'm interested. What's your take on that?
I think, you know, the Hader thing just throws a wrench into it. This past trade deadline with everything, not just the Hader one, but like the lack of bringing in a bat and all that, really kind of threw a wrench into everything with my thoughts on David Stearns. I like both of them, but that still threw a wrench into everything for me.
Yeah, you and me both, brother. You and me both.
All right, hey, before I let you go, you know, a lot of talk about this Packers offense and, you know, kind of trending. Are they trending in the right direction? Dan Orlovsky made the point that he thinks this offense by the end of the season is going to be better than what they were with Davante Adams. You buying or selling that?
Oh, that's another tough one. I think they'll be more well-rounded because I think they have more talent overall at the wide receiver position, but I don't know. I mean, Adams, him and Rodgers, that third down, it didn't matter if it was third and 12 or third and 3, he found a way to do it. And they don't have that type of connection right now. So time will tell, but I think they'll be more well-rounded.
Yeah. Well, we'll see, man. All right, dude. Hey, appreciate the phone call. We'll chat with you again soon, okay, bud?
Thanks for having me, brother. You have a great rest of the day.
You got it. There you go. There's C-Bomb hopping off here. So, rest of you, what else is on your mind? Don't forget, it is a Thirsty Thursday. So, if you just want to toast somebody or send a shout-out to somebody, hit us up with that text or tweet or Facebook message, okay? So, The rest of you, yeah, I'll make that a Twitter poll. Who do you have more confidence in? Is it David Stearns or is it Craig Counsell? Hey, what up, everybody? Dan Casper here. I hope you are enjoying this episode of the Man Cave Podcast. I just wanted to send you a quick reminder that if you are not subscribing to the Man Cave Podcast, do me a favor, do me a solid, and subscribe to that podcast. It's free, okay? And we're available on like every single podcasting platform out there. iTunes, Spotify, Google, Stitcher, Amazon, you name it. We're probably there. And if you, on your favorite podcasting platform, if you have the ability to rate or review the podcast like on iTunes or Spotify, go ahead and do me another favor if you don't mind, please. Five stars. Leave a solid review too if you can, like on iTunes. That way other people can find the Man Cave Podcast, okay? And don't forget to follow me on Facebook, facebook.com/CasperSports, and at Twitter at DanKasper. You can even follow me on Instagram, DanCasperSports. Remember, that's a Casper with a K. Now, let's get back to this episode of the Man Cave Podcast. Can't help but be a part of the decision, talking about Romeo Doubs and Christian Watson right there. So, of course, you got many Packers fans out there saying, hey, does this mean he's going to play for a couple more years or anything like that? The only thing I would say is that we are in the early stages of this season. There will be plenty of time to talk about futures and decisions and all that sort of stuff. But I think it's notable to kind of bring that up where he talked about, you know, a lot of these guys, you know, under contracts and that, where, you know, the thing I take away from it is he views this team as a team that is built to win for, you know, at least the next couple of years here. He talked about the defense. He talked about the offensive line. He talked about the running backs under contract. Now, Aaron Jones, I have to imagine if he is going to be playing for the Packers next year, might be a little bit of a restructure sort of thing, because as we noted the other day here, his cap hits like are at around $20 million. So I would imagine that would get adjusted. But, you know, you got Elgton Jenkins who's going to be a free agent. Alan Lazard, you know, is going to be a free agent and all that sort of stuff. But we've got plenty of time to hit that down the road. But I think it is notable to kind of hear his thoughts on how I think to me it's just kind of another shout out to his two young wide receivers that he likes what he's seeing. He likes their potential. He sees something in those two guys. You know, at the beginning of training camp and at the beginning of preseason, it was a huge topic of conversation. And he was like, we got to be patient, you know, got to work them in. And then remember when it was like he was kind of calling them out in preseason, like they got to do this or they got to do that. And everybody was like freaking out that Aaron Rodgers was going after his young wide receivers and just like throwing them under the bus and all that. And, you know, now he's like, I think these guys could be dudes. I mean, he's throwing back shoulder throws to a rookie wide receiver and Romeo Doubs, for crying out loud. So I think it's just kind of him subtly kind of like giving some credit, maybe giving some confidence to those two young wide receivers over there. Be like, you guys got potential. Keep working. Keep learning. As he said a little bit later on, if you keep learning, keep, you know, working on your craft, you guys are going to be special players. That they have that ability, that they have that mindset. They have that talent to do that. So, it is kind of, yeah, I could see where some Packers fans were a little excited to maybe hear that a little bit, because like, oh, does that mean he's going to stick around for a couple years? Well, we got a lot of season left to play here, right? I mean, we got a lot of games. Let's let it play out, all right? Let's just focus on this season. Let's focus on the 2022 season. Offseason will probably be here. This season will probably be, you know, it'll just go like this. We're already one quarter of the way through, you guys. You know, let's take it all in. Let's take it game by game. But, you know, talking about this offense and we're going to get to what I know it's a few days old here, but in case you didn't hear it, and kind of want to bring up the offense here a little bit because I want to get your thoughts. Do you like the direction that it's trending? Have you seen enough in the first few games to see, like, okay, I could see where, you know, this offense could be, by the time we get to the postseason or, you know, into that third quarter of the regular season, fourth quarter in regular season, that this is going to be a pretty solid offensive unit. Have we seen enough to kind of come away with that thought or that conclusion? I think if you break it down by the running backs, like, oh, yeah, Aaron Jones is a dude. A.J. Dillon's a dude. And the thing is, I think I saw the other day. Let me see if I can find it. But I thought I saw a stat or a number that either Aaron Jones or, yeah, I think it was Aaron Jones. Aaron Jones hasn't seen, or it's like very small, 8-man boxes so far, which is kind of mind-boggling a little bit that, you know, these defenses. Yeah, here we go. This is from Zach Cruz. Per Next Gen Stats, Aaron Jones still hasn't had a rushing attempt against an 8-man box this season. Think about that. That defenses are still preparing, game planning for Aaron Rodgers, even though there's some question marks surrounding his, you know, wide receivers and, you know, chemistry and consistency and all that. They're still respecting 12, even without Devontae Adams over there for him to kind of target. They're still respecting the heck out of a 4-time back-to-back MVP right now. But Aaron Jones still hasn't, never had a rushing attempt against an 8-man box this season. And I think a lot of that has to do with, too, you know, Aaron seeing what's in front of him, what the defense is presenting, making adjustments at the line and kind of attacking it that way. I think some of that has to go with what Aaron is seeing when he breaks the huddle and goes up to the line of scrimmage and seeing what the defense is showing and diagnosing it. So that's, you know, I think Aaron gets a little bit of credit like that, and putting Aaron Jones in some decent and some good situations, good formations to attack that defense in the running game. But it's still kind of incredible to see that Aaron Jones, per Next Gen Stats, 4 games in, has not had a single rushing attempt against an 8-man box. Will that change as the season progresses? Maybe. I mean, the odds of him never going up against an 8-man box is, you know, it's not likely to happen. But at the same time, when you look at Aaron Jones's numbers so far this year, the dude is averaging 6.8 yards per carry. 6.8 yards per carry. That is third in the league. He's got the 7th most rushing attempts. He's 327 there. And the thing is, too, so he's 7th in the league in rushing, okay? He's 24th in attempts, just 48. Maximizing the usage out of Aaron Jones. So if we want to kind of take a look at, you know, some of the players above him and attempts, look at it. This is fun. So Saquon Barkley is a leading rusher. We all know that, right? And we'll really deep dive into that in key matchups and keys to victory tomorrow. Saquon Barkley has 84 attempts. Nick Chubb is 2nd, 81 attempts. I'm looking at the guys with the most rushing yards in the league. So Saquon Barkley's got 463. Nick Chubb's 459. Then it drops down. A lot, actually. Like, you're talking over 100 yards. Miles Sanders is 3rd, 356, 72 attempts. Cordarrelle Patterson is 4th in the league in rushing, 340 yards, 58 attempts. Josh Jacobs, 70 attempts, 836 yards. Jonathan Taylor, 81 attempts, 328. And then Aaron Jones with 48 attempts, 327 yards rushing. The only players above Aaron Jones in terms of average per carry is, and there's nobody close to him in terms of the production, but you've, I guess, besides a quarterback, but DeAndre Swift, 27 attempts, 231 yards, 8.6 yards per carry. Then it's Lamar Jackson, 37 attempts, 316 yards, 8.5 yards a carry. Then you got Jeff Driscoll for, you know, two attempts for 15 yards, and then Elijah Mitchell, six attempts, 41 yards, 6.8, tied there with Aaron Jones. It's a staggering number, and I get it. It's just 4 weeks in and that, but that kind of factors in that he has not had to go up against eight-man boxes either. That's a crazy, crazy nugget there. All right, we're going to take a quick break, and then let's talk a little bit more about this offense. I'll play the clip from a couple days ago, in case you haven't heard it, from Dan Orlovsky about how he thinks the Packers' offense will be better without Davante Adams this season. Are you buying or selling that? From what you have seen so far, and kind of doing a little projection here, do you agree or do you not agree? I think the first thing we have to do with this is define what is better. You know, are we defining better as statistically better? Are we defining it, you know, well, stats, what, you know, just what's the definition of better? More averaging more points per game? Is it, you know, passing yards? I mean, that sort of stuff. I think that's where we got to kind of start with this whole thing. Is where do we define better in this whole thing? So, like, numbers-wise and passing yards and all that, is Aaron Rodgers going to have better numbers than the last couple years? Probably not. You know, statistically, is he going to have as many passing yards or more passing yards? Maybe not. Is he going to have more touchdown passes? Maybe not. Probably not. If I were a betting person, probably not. But if your definition of better is like, all right, spreading the ball out a little bit more, involving the run game a little bit more, I think that's what we have to define here. And I think that's what Orlovsky was referring to. And he kind of made that point where he said, it just looks different to us. It's not, and that's what we were talking about all offseason with this Packers offense. It was going to be different. And that was kind of the exciting thing. You know, we were so used to 12 and 17, mixed in with a little Aaron Jones and that sort of thing, right? It was such a it was like kind of a running joke, but at the same time, it was similar in a lot of facets that set up the pass for the run, you know, that sort of thing. Now it's like running the ball to set up the pass, which a lot of teams do, but For the Packers, again, it was kind of like a running joke, but there was a lot of truth to it. You're you know, running the ball to set up they're passing the ball to set up the run. So it's different. And I think that's why it's, you know, on the surface to a lot of people out there, like, well, there's no way it's going to be better, because maybe you're looking at the statistics, you're looking at all those catches from Devontae for touchdowns and total receptions and yardages, and, you know, Aaron's doing this. He's got 40 and a line of 40 and 5. It's probably not going to happen. And it's different. So to me, when I look at this offense, just me personally, I can see what Orlovsky is referring to or trying to insinuate, that they can be more balanced than maybe what we have seen in the last few years. Does that mean their statistics, you know, the statistics that we always kind of look at, total yards, total touchdowns, you know, passing touchdowns, that sort of thing, those statistics that we have so become so accustomed to looking at, they're going to be lower, they're going to be different. And I think that's where it's like, oh, they're obviously not as good then, because, you know, they're not the same as the last couple of years. But for me, better, I think, will be a little bit, you know, more balanced, where we're going to see more of the run game. We have seen that a little bit. You know, the passing hasn't been a whole lot of deep shots, although, as we've noted the other day too, the explosive plays, Packers are tied for the second most explosive plays in the league, which I think it caught me off guard, and I think it catches a lot of people off guard, that when you look at it, the Packers are tied for the second most with 18, tied for the second most big plays. They have 18 rushes for over 10 yards, 17 receptions for over 20 yards. As you heard, they lead in yak. That was a 2007 term that was really kind of going around with Green Bay. Remember that? Favre's final year. It was before Ryan Grant kind of established himself, and it was a lot of short passes, yards after the catch sort of thing, spreading it out a little bit. But to me, better is more dynamic, spreading it out, doing different things, the RPOs, the jet sweeps, involving the running backs in the passing game, that sort of thing. And I think that's what Orlovsky is referring to. You know, whereas maybe some people are just looking at it from a statistics standpoint. Well, they're not scoring 40 points a game, or they're not putting up 500 yards a game. Aaron's not throwing for 400 yards a game. They're not obviously a better offense in the last couple of years because they're not doing that. Well, let's look at the bigger picture. Let's deep dive into this thing a little bit more. And that kind of goes back to the definition. What do you define better as? And me personally, it's balance. Doing it different ways. You're looking at it, some of the other numbers too. Green Bay's, let me double check, but yesterday it was third in red zone. And that's an improvement from last year. Remember, what was one of the biggest issues? Red zone. And the year prior, they were so damn good at it. They were so good at it. And then, I'm trying to see. Yeah, this is DVO rankings, you've probably heard DVOA rankings quite a bit here. But, the Titans are by far the best. And, you could kind of make a, Derrick Henry. But offensive DVOA, top red zone offenses. Number one is Tennessee at 107.1%. That's an astounding number. Number two is the Saints. And this will tell you why this is an astounding number. The Saints are number two with 48.2. Titans have that doubled. Number three then is the Green Bay Packers. Four is the Lions. Lions offense is just a humming right now. And then it's the Chiefs at number five. So it's these numbers that we don't, you go to like NFL.com, you go to, ESPN.com, and you click on those stats tabs, and you look at team stats, and you look at player stats, and you're probably not seeing a whole lot of, Packers up there besides Aaron Jones, as we were just kind of going through just a little bit ago. But if you look at these other numbers, maybe the numbers that matter a little bit more, that maybe tell a little bit more of the story, these red zone numbers, these explosive plays, that kind of paints the picture in a little bit more detail. So do I agree with Orlovsky that this offense will be better by season's end compared to the other years? My definition of better? Yeah, I think it's got that chance. Maybe it's a little bit of a homerism for me. I understand it. It's been inconsistent. Besides the running game, the passing game has been inconsistent. But for me, from the one thing that really stands out to me is that Aaron is getting the ball to his younger receivers, in this case, Romeo Doubs. We have yet to see that a little bit more with Christian Watson. You'd like to see Christian Watson involved in the passing game a little bit more, and I think eventually we will. But he has been targeting Romeo Doubs, and that was kind of a question we had at the beginning of the year. Okay, is Aaron going to hold on to the ball too long? Is he just going to target, his guys like Alan Lazard and Randall Cobb? He's been targeting a rookie wide receiver the most so far. So the fact that he's open to that, and the fact that, even with a couple of fumbles or even a drop from Romeo Doubs, Aaron has still gone back to him. And I think that's big. Because is Aaron doing that a few years ago? Probably not. But circumstances are a little bit different because, a few years ago, he had a little bit more depth at wide receiver, so he could afford to shut somebody out. Can't do that now. So you factor that in, you factor in that they are really incorporating both A.J. Dillon, Aaron Jones in the backfield together, creating some confusion, putting them in motion, which is something that I mentioned that before the season started that I wanted to see. They're doing it. You're seeing this offense kind of, how do I want to say this? Showing a bunch of different stuff and showcasing that they can do a bunch of different things. And that to me is a part of the definition of better. Being more diverse. And in yesterday's presser too, Aaron kind of talked about, or he was asked a question about progressions and reads and like what kind of goes into his mindset, because it was Bill Huber who asked him. He's like, you know, Packers Twitter, everybody watching at home will note that, you know, Aaron missed this guy, Aaron missed that guy. And it's easy for us to see it, you know, after the play, or easy for us to see it from a bird's eye view, as opposed to a dude who's got like 3 seconds to throw the football and he's got massive, you know, guys coming at him. And Aaron kind of talks about his progressions and his first reads, second reads, third reads. And he kind of made a joke about it, but, you know, he was asked a follow-up question, like, so if the play is like, you know, your first read and he's open right away, you know, do you ignore the third read or something like that? And Aaron's like, oh, not all the time, he said, but, you know, like last year when 17 was out there, yeah, you kind of ignored a lot of those progressions right away. Insinuating, yeah, he targeted Devontae a lot, and Devontae was a different creature. Which, I'm sure a lot of Packers fans now will probably go back to that NFC playoff game and that pass with Alan Lazard wide open over the freaking middle to throw it to Devontae in double coverage. But where this is trending, do they have some stuff they have to clean up with the offense? 100%. Passing offense needs to be cleaned up. It needs to be more consistent. That's the biggest thing. It needs to be more consistent. You know, Aaron's talking about getting Randall Cobb more involved than that. We'll see. Me personally, I want to see Robert Tonyan more involved. I want to see him be more of a target, especially down the seam. We saw that against New England, that seam catch, that touchdown catch. We know what Alan Lazard brings to the table. We know the connection he has with Aaron. I just want to see consistency now. Run game's there. Aaron Jones and A.J. Dillon, that run game's there. But if we get a little bit more consistency with the pass, and what I mean by consistency, it's, you know, getting Tonyan involved a little bit more, getting Christian Watson involved a little bit more, securing that football, then yeah, I think this offense will be better. Statistically, they may not be better. But stats don't mean everything. What did Mike McCarthy always say? Stats are for losers. Stats and rankings and all that sort of stuff, they don't mean everything. I mean, for crying out loud, what, Dallas last year? What, they were like number one in like the majority of offensive categories, right? How'd that work out for them? Mm-mm. Nope. So I think there's some points that you can look at like, okay, I can kind of see it. I can kind of see it trending. I'm not saying the arrow is like fully straight up and it's like, oh yeah, it's going to be so freaking awesome by the end of the year. I think it's kind of, it's just above the line. It's above the line. It's like at a, you know, it's just pointing up a little bit. I want to see some more examples. And I want to see, you know, like the offense, if they're going up against an inferior defense or a defense that, you know, isn't that good, I want to see that offense for Green Bay put up some big numbers too. That's going to do it for this episode of the Man Cave Podcast. Big thanks for tuning in to this episode of the Man Cave Podcast. And a reminder, never miss an episode of the Man Cave Podcast by subscribing to the Man Cave Podcast. We're already on your favorite podcasting platforms like iTunes, Spotify, Google, and Stitcher. And don't forget to give us a solid rating too. That way other people can find the Man Cave Podcast. Until next time, I'm Dan Casper, and we'll see you in the Man Cave.